This Arrow FM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name's Mark Pacey from the Wide Upper Archive. Today we're going, as usual, through three more stories from our past. Straight into it. Are children vastly different today than they were in our past? Let's have a look at what Ben Irons felt children were like from his childhood days. These days, there is so much talk of juvenile delinquency and the problems of youth that it's interesting to look back 70 years to see just what precocious juveniles did to dissipate their energies and enthusiasms outside school hours. Now, these words could have been written today by a resident reflecting on their childhood while looking at the current youth. But these words were published in 1959. The recollections of Mr. Irons and what it was like growing up in the late 1800s are not that far removed from what it is like for children of today over a century later. Boys were boys just as they are today, with all the same instincts, ambitions and opportunities, and facilities to exercise them were both limited and primitive. That's his quote, not mine. Irons then recalled there was always vandalism committed by young boys, as well as theft and other minor crimes. The difference was the punishment meted out, which was very severe. As late as 1904, there were in prison one offender under 10 years of age, two under 12, four under 15, 68 between 15 and 20 years of age. All of these were in for theft and deceit. Some of the bad behaviour was put down to a lack of transport. This was before cars and buses, and only a few men had bikes. Children certainly didn't, and were restricted to having to find entertainment in their immediate areas. In the summer months, boys could find leisure in bathing in the local creeks. Togs were a luxury item. Decency was maintained by cutting the two bottom corners out of an oatmeal bag for leg holes and tying up the top. If someone's sister joined them on a rare occasion, she had to wear a long flowing nightdress. A popular place to swim was in a pool behind one of the local cordial factories. It had a muddy bottom and a large tortoise stump in the middle. Young Ben did ponder, where did the cordial factory get its water to make its cordials? Hopefully not the pool frequented by the children. Boys love playing at war. Today it is on mobile devices, Xboxes and PlayStations, but in Ben's day they had to use their imagination and crafting skills. Bamboo could be made into a sword and a kerosene lid into a shield. For cruder games of war, a cow's paddock would be selected and a game of aerial bombardment from the leavings would play out, although the rules stated it must be dry ammunition that is used. But in times of excitement, this rule went out the window and soon we were scooping it up in both hands. Boys were also into reading, not the tomes by Dickens and Shakespeare, but the literary equivalents of graphic novels. Cheap magazines, often horror-themed, known as penny dreadfuls, were quite popular with the kids, but teachers were not fond of them. As one young entrepreneur found out, he bought a collection to school to sell to his classmates, but a teacher promptly confiscated the lot. After a period in which kids knew the teacher was reading them, he publicly burned them as a lesson. Technology and trends change over time, but the core values of children remain the same. Kids want the same thing: entertainment, fun, and a bit of mischief. After hearing what young Ben got up to in his youth, it makes you think, are the kids today really that different from those in the 19th century? Okay, on to our first piece of music. I have to play this one because I've been haunted by something that I've heard. Well, I haven't heard it, I've heard of it. So there is a, how do we word this, an artist, shall we say, that recently at their birthday party they performed a cover of the song, and all people who have heard it said it was very bad, and even this person said at the end of it, oh, we should have rehearsed that a bit more, that was a bit bad. So I cannot bring myself to listen to it, so I'm going to play the original to purge that, whatever it is, performance out of my mind. So this is one of my favorite songs. This is The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. Was The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. If you're going to cover Fleetwood Mac, you better have the chops. Otherwise, just don't. It's like I said, I cannot bring myself to. It's all over the internet and people are commenting on it. I trust their opinions. Okay, next song. It's a Monday. Next story. Lucky it's written out in front of me. The idea for a tunnel under the Rimutaka Hills had been on the cards for a long time. In the early 1900s, a tunnel idea was floated, but it was deemed too difficult to complete at the time. In 1936, the government approved the plan to construct a tunnel, with digging due to commence at the end of the decade. When World War II happened, this was delayed until after hostilities ended. Despite many rumours, the United States Marines that were here during the war did not offer to dig the tunnel for us. The Americans that were here were fighting men and did not have the skills or the equipment for such a job, and their priority was defeating the Japanese. The war ended in 1945, and the construction of the tunnel officially started in 1948. The following year, the entrances to the new tunnel were completed at both ends of the hill. The construction contract was given to Morrison Nixon, who were based in San Francisco. Despite the war rumors being false, the tunnel was still constructed by an American firm, along with Wellington Company, Downer & Company. After digging the tunnel at both ends and getting as far as 1,054 feet on the western end and 820 on the eastern, the real work began in mid-1951. There was still 27,000 feet to go before two starter tunnels would be able to link up. 4 years was allocated for the completion of the project. On April 20, 1954, the diggers broke through midway under hills and the tunnel digging was complete. In the days that predated GPS, the diggers went on bearings the old-fashioned way, and despite this, when the two diggings hit, they were off by just 45 millimetres. That's a remarkable achievement. There was still much work to be done, and the concrete linings were needed for all of the tunnel, and the railway line still had to be laid. The contractors handed over the project to the New Zealand Railways on February 1, 1955, and the tracks in leading up to the tunnel were worked on. On October 29, the last train on the old line completed its journey from Carterton to Upper Hutt. This was quite the event, and would be the last time the old foul system would take people over the incline. It would also be the last time the train would travel through the settlements such as Cross Creek. Small communities with their own schools would become shadows of their former selves. The big day came on November the 3rd when two special trains left for the opening ceremony of the new tunnel at the Featherston End. The new route would shave off 40 minutes from the journey. The trains were also now able to be much longer and heavier, no longer having to deal with the steep tracks. 70 years on, the tunnel is still going strong. Recent upgrade has ensured that it will continue to be a vital link to our capital to the south for many more years to come. One thing I haven't mentioned there, which of course is relevant to what I'm doing there, At the end of World War II, the prisoner of war camp in Featherston was used as accommodation for the tunnel workers. So they had somewhere to live close to where they were working. So a lot of them, they would be there from Monday to Friday, then they would go home for the weekend, and then they would come back. And they spent years living in the prisoner of war camp, which was then known as the Public Works Camp. So there you go. Little snippet of information there for you that might come up in a quiz one day. You can go, ha ha, Mark told us about that. So another piece of music. Again, I've actually checked through the history on here about what I have played and what I haven't played. I haven't played a piece of music, but I have played five other songs by this band, which sounds like a lot. But then when you compare it to how much Hans Zimmer has Mark played, well, it's a whole lot more than five. So here we have the great X-Japan, and this is Loveness.
See the roses of love stand in the rain, blooming with flowers. Breathe, keep breathing, my love. No reason to let the world bring you down. Till we die, I'll be loving you dear. Till we fly from here to heaven. Till we die, I'll be the roses you tell. So don't you cry. It's the end of the world.
And that was La Venus from the We Are X soundtrack, which is a documentary about that band. It's a hard watch. They've had a very hard life, those guys. Right, last story already. It's that time. Disasters can occur by human action or natural events, but they can also be caused by mischievous animals. In October 1897, in the Masterton Hospital, the staff were doing their rounds. There were several people in for various reasons and were staying overnight to recover. The hospital matron had decided that it would be nice to have a furry friend as company for her and some of the patients. After all, what brings a smile to a sick person more than a cute animal? The matron thought a kitten would be the ideal pet to have. This young feline soon grew bored in the matron's sitting room and started to explore. Leaving a kitten to its own devices might not have been the best idea, especially in a hospital full of sick people, but how much damage can one kitten really cause? As it turns out, quite a bit. The kitten that the paper named Puss decided to get up to a bit of mischief and see what its claws could do. There was a table that had a very enticing tablecloth hanging down from it. What a great thing to play with. Puss leapt up, extended his claws and dug them into the tablecloth. Expecting to hang there or hear the satisfying tearing sound, Puss was to be in for quite a shock. On top of the table was a large kerosene lamp. This was in the days before electricity and light had to come from other sources. In this case, a kerosene lamp. As Puss hung there attached to the tablecloth, he started to slide down towards the floor. But there was no sound of tearing. The cloth was being pulled down, but slowly, as if there was something heavy on top of the table. The kerosene lamp edged closer and closer to the edge of the table, and then it was pulled off by the determined kitten. It fell, lit and full of fuel, towards the floor. Unfortunately for Puss, he was in its path, and the lamp fell on him, and he used up all of his 9 lives in 1 moment. The lamp broke and spilled its fuel all over the floor, and it snaked its way across the room, and then it ignited. Hearing the commotion, the matron and the staff ran into the room. They were confronted with a broken lamp, a dead kitten, and a room on fire. The floor, the walls, and the furniture were all burning now, and it was the quick action of the staff that ensured the fire was extinguished and the damage was reserved to just 1 room. The next day, the damage was assessed. Puss's antics had cost £50 worth of damage. Now, how much? £50 in today's money? Well, it's quite a bit. Let's not beat about the bush. It's a lot. Puss caused the equivalent of $12,550 in damage to the Masterton Hospital. The hospital was insured and the damage was repaired. But it was unbelievable that one small kitten could have caused all this damage and cost. Maybe the matron should have got a puppy. All right, time to our last piece of music now. Now, on the weekend, we watched a movie that I've been wanting to watch for a very long time. And I knew it because of the soundtrack. Fantastic soundtrack. So I was really looking forward to it. So it's a movie called Interstellar by Christopher Nolan. He's done some good movies. I thought maybe this is one of them. No, it wasn't. I wasn't a big fan of it. But having said that, it's still one of those movies that, even though I didn't think it was great, still has a really, really good soundtrack. So we're going to play the main theme from Interstellar. And yes, this is by the great Hans Zimmer. And that was the main theme from Interstellar. So it's, yeah, like I said, awesome soundtrack. I didn't get the movie. It was okay, but yeah. Although if you ever want proof that Matthew McConaughey is a very, very good actor, yeah, watch that. He's known for doing a lot of the comedy and fun stuff. Yeah, he can do serious. He can do serious very, very well. So that is us done for the week. We're on time. Yep. So that was a good one. So, yeah, we'll catch up with you in a week's time, unless I've forgotten that Monday's a holiday again. I don't think it is. I'm sure someone would have told me. So we'll catch up with you then with three more stories and possibly news where I can say, hey, that massive project I'm working on where I've been writing, you know, I'm either finished or nearly finished. So we're actually getting, like, 2 chapters left out of 17. So that's what I've been doing this winter. You know, I've been writing a book. So I'm making very good progress. So I said, we've got 2 left. And yeah, hopefully these last 2 aren't going to be as complicated as some of the other ones. At least the one I'm working on now is very straightforward, which actually ties into the story we did about the tunnel. So chapter 16 is all about what happened directly after the war to the camp. And what was it used for before it was all broken up and sold? So it existed up until 1956, believe it or not, and kept getting used for various things, at least 3 different purposes, and a police raid. There was all sorts of interesting stuff happened there after the war. So that's what we're working on at least this week or the next few days, depending on how quickly I can write it. And then, of course, the last chapter is sort of the big wrap-up. We call it legacy, you know, the people coming back and visiting, and the efforts to have memorials and why we remember what happened there and what's there now. Just that last big wrap up, which again should be fairly straightforward, and also some tributes to the people that actually helped make that happen, which were Bill McCurro and Adrian Staples. Both of them did amazing things to keep that memory alive and help memorialize it. So we're definitely going to pay tribute to those 2 people as well. So like I said, that's us done for the week. We will catch up with you again on Monday with 3 more stories, 3 more bits of music. Yeah, that's it. It's a lot warmer today. So again, if you're listening and you're thinking about heading out, you might not need your scarf and your hat, depending on your tolerance to cold. So have a good one, and we'll catch up with you in a week's time. See you later.